Into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him. Yeah, no.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Hello there, you're welcome along to Monday evening's Off the Ball. Coming up, we're going to talk some athletics, something we need to do more of on the show. And in this Olympic year, Carl Dennehy will be with us. Four Irish women now suddenly ranked in the world's top 20 in the 800 metres world rankings. Indoor records being smashed at an unbelievable pace at the moment. It is introducing talk of the new super spikes, which are making an impact on world records at the moment. So Carl will fill us in this hour. Andy Dunn on Monday Night Rugby after 8 o'clock. We have Pat Nevin on the football show. Merseyside derby success for Everton at Anfield, first time since 1999. Liverpool, four defeats at home. Jordan Henderson injured. It goes from bad to worse. 53106, the text number. We're at Off the Ball on Twitter. Richie McCormack, evening.
You ruined my spike in broken records joke there, Joe, but thank you.
Aye, listen. Any joke of yours I can nip in the bud is a good day's work in my book.
Probably better off, yeah.
And a wonderful collector's item, Dave McIntyre. Good evening to you.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are we?
Very well, very well. Great to have you with us, Dave. So Andy Dunn is coming on the show just after 8 o'clock. He's going to be talking about the Irish attack. We had this conversation just before coming in there. There was a stat which upset Andy greatly when he heard it. And we get into the whys and the wherefores. It comes down to offloading. Ultimately in 2021, and Shane Horgan was saying as much yesterday in the Sunday Times, Dave, offloading really is the only feasible way to break down modern day defences. They are too well drilled and too organised and too aggressive. So offloading is your best way to do it. In the Six Nations thus far, France lead the way, one offload per nine carries. One offload per nine carries. Welsh, one offload per 19. Not bad. Bringing up the rear, Ireland, one offload per 54 carries, Dave. 54 hard, bruising, blunt force carries, and then an offload thrown in. So this upset Andy greatly when he heard it.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. He would have been an offloading kind of guy, Andy Dunn, when he was a professional. And I was listening to, I'm not sure which, was it last Monday or Wednesday evening, had Liam Toland on with Keith Wood, it was a Wednesday night rugby perhaps, and he was giving a very interesting stat on how well we're actually carrying the ball in this year's Six Nations, that we've gone up from about a yard per carry to maybe 4 or 5 yards per carry, and CJ Stander in particular is getting over the gain line with an awful lot more regularity this year than he was last. So it's not as if the offloading opportunities would not be there if that was the intention we were bringing into the game. Because once you get over the gain line, the opportunity to offload is almost always there if somebody is on the shoulder of the player with the ball and the player carrying the ball is of the right mind to be looking for that offload constantly. And it's a killer for a defence once you make one tackle to have to get straight back up to try and fend off the next ball carrier because the offload has only taken half a second. And we're looking at this Italian side that we're going to be playing at the weekend, and they are so young. There are several in their side that have played more for Italy than they have their clubs, and yet they have scored more tries than us. They've made more clean breaks and they have more offloads than we have, and they've played France and England in their opening two games.
Well, I know Richie's News Round starts with my cat who was talking today, so we'll hear that in a moment. What else caught your eye over the weekend? I have no doubt you watched the golf last night.
Last night's golf, wasn't that just spectacular stuff?
Yeah.
And it's just one in a long line of tournaments, crowd free, that I have been on the edge of my seat for since play returned back in June, I think it was. And I had a financial stake in what was unfolding as well, because I was on Hovland, and it was very annoying that we didn't see a single shot of Victor Hovland's round until his last shot. I needed him to back his way into a top eight finish. But a friend of mine was on Tony Finau, is every week on Tony Finau, and we thought this was finally the week that I would have to stop asking him to cease backing mediocrity and have to eat some humble pie, because Tony was getting the job done. And I mean, he had his chance, and Max Homa had two chances, and the drama in that last hour was as good as any tournament you'd see on a brilliant golf course, which is conducive to shot making and making players think, and the drone shots were amazing, and I loved every minute of it, Joe.
Yeah, it was really magic. I mean, Homa ultimately won on the second playoff hole, but on the 18th in regulation, he had a three-footer to win the tournament, to win $1.6 million, to sail off into the sunset, 3 feet. And it just exemplified how taxing golf is mentally. Like so many other sports, not all sports, of course, but so many other sports, for instance, football or rugby, those crunch, nervy last couple of minutes, the clock is your friend. You know, the clock ends it for you. You can be slightly more passive, whereas golf just forces you to pull the trigger. And so even a three-footer with a bit of break in it, which is nothing compared to what Max Homa did over the previous 4 days, it's nothing. But then this magical thing called pressure intervenes, and of course he misses it, and suddenly it's into a playoff. And then Tony Finau has his chance. He's a six-footer, I think, to win the first playoff hole. He misses it. I know Ben Hogan said this putting, Lark, is a pain in the backside. It should be worth half a stroke. How can I just drill an amazing shot down the fairway 290 yards and it counts for the same as a three-footer? But that's the glory and the madness of golf.
It is, and you didn't mention the shot that Max Homa had to hit prior to Tony Finau having that putt to win the tournament. His drive on the 10th, the first playoff hole, ended up pretty much up against a tree. He had about a foot of space between his body and the tree, and he somehow managed to conjure this brilliant pitch shot onto the green that seemed to grab as well, and he was able to two-putt from there and hope that Finau didn't make his putt. But the slow-mo, and some of the slow-mos from last night's round, were spectacular looking. To see the way he had to choke down in the club and turn it over in an attempt just to try and keep it on the green. It was fabulous stuff. It really was. Brilliant Sunday night viewing. Another Sunday night, though, where there was absolutely no sign of Rory McIlroy, and another week where McIlroy is unfortunately an absolute irrelevance at the moment.
Will you get off his back? Will you get off his back?
It's from a place of love, Joe, because I love watching him play well and I love watching him win.
I feel you're angry. I feel your angry text messages to me about McIlroy aren't as loving.
I just feel like I've been let down so many times, where I get myself set on a Sunday evening and get the boys to bed and get the dinner ready and get stuff ready for the Monday, and tonight's going to be the night that Rory's going to show us why he's the best player in the world. And he's hit the self-destruct button by the fourth or fifth hole. Unfortunately, this week he had hit that button long before we got to Sunday evening.
Richie, I know you were glued to the golf, but we spent enough time talking about that. Now, what caught your eye over the weekend?
Jordan Brown last night. It was fantastic to watch him win the Welsh Open snooker.
Celtic Manor. This is really, I'm blindsided by all this. What's the deal here?
World number 81 going into the week. He, a few months ago, was in danger of losing his card. He had a pretty respectable showing at the World Snooker Championship Sunday. Were rearranged to the latter half of last year. He hadn't been beyond a ranking quarter final until the German Masters. What was it, 2-3 weeks ago now at this stage? He hadn't been beyond a semi-final in a ranking event ever before this week. And along the way, he beats Mark Selby, Steve Maguire and Ronnie O'Sullivan to win his first ever ranking tournament. He's just the fourth ever Northern Irishman to win a ranking event, and he's in some pretty esteemed company there. He's alongside Alex Higgins, he's alongside Dennis Taylor, and his playing partner, his kind of training partner, Mark Allen, is up there too. And just a remarkable turnaround for a guy who nearly lost his card, was spending his time a couple of years ago split between working full-time in a petrol station and full-time trying to wake his way in the world of snooker, and last night it all kind of paid off for him when he won his first ranking event. It was brilliant just watching that last frame. I mean, he looked, I don't want to say nervous, because you never really look nervous when you're playing Ronnie O'Sullivan and when you're on the verge of winning your first tournament, but watching him as he sunk the red, beyond which there was no comeback for O'Sullivan, and he was then fist pumping every ball of his clearance because he just couldn't hide his delight at it. It was just pure magic watching that happen and unfold.
33-year-old from Antrim. You've given some of the sporting side of things. I mean, I do enjoy that his nickname is the Antrim Ferrari. What's the deal there? Do we know?
I don't know. Is it something to do with being a redhead? I could be wrong.
I don't know.
Or he could be a fast potter. But either way, yeah, it's a classic name.
It's not the catchiest, Antrim Ferrari. But anyway,
No, Sheriff of Pottingham.
We must try to get him on the show. That's amazing. Okay. Well, that counts as a decent moment of sport over the weekend. Let's get into the news round. On Off the Ball it is, with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters. I mentioned, Richie, you were starting with my cat. I mean, the good news is that COVID doesn't seem to be in the Irish camp as opposed to the French camp at the moment. And they've all reported for duty today. So my cat was speaking to the media.
Yeah, touch wood. Ireland attack coach Mike Catt says the squad are COVID-free despite an outbreak in the France camp. Since their victory in Dublin, 9 of the French matchday 23 have tested positive for coronavirus. It's now 11 players in all and 4 members of their coaching staff. Six Nations organisers say a decision regarding their game with Scotland will be made on Wednesday. Catt saying today that Ireland have been through 4 rounds of testing and not a single positive among them. Ireland are also free of new injuries ahead of Saturday's trip to Italy, and Catt says they're working hard to rectify that aforementioned bluntness in attack.
It's like anything, every team wants to score, you know, 4 or 5 tries every game. Everybody wants to go out and express themselves, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. I think where we currently are, we firmly believe the way we're going is the right way. We probably could have scored 2 or 3 extra tries against Wales with 14 men with the opportunities that we created. Against France as well. So it's making sure at this level that the players understand you have to nail what you create. And, we've obviously been pretty disappointed in terms of the finishing. But ultimately, the players have got to get that right for this weekend.
On the French situation for a moment, the list of positives include, amongst others, Fabien Galthié, the head coach, the captain now, Charles Olivan, Anton Dupont, Brice Doulin, Arthur Vincent, Julien Marchand, Gabin Villiers, and Mohamed Haous. So that's a serious group to be missing. They obviously do have massive strength and depth. So we'll have to see what happens Wednesday. They're testing every 24 hours at the moment, as Richie said. And the worry at the moment is the thing seems to be running rife within the camp. And, you know, you test negative until suddenly you test positive. So we'll have to see, Dave. There is a fallow weekend. Next weekend, it would mean the Scots and the French would have to play 3 weeks in a row, but it wouldn't be disastrous if it did get pushed out a week and that meant that everything could continue as we've been going okay, which is, you know, on balance, reasonably good until this happened to the French squad.
Yeah, it's been going really almost issue-free to this point. And the list of names you've mentioned there, I mean, certainly 4 or 5 of them are absolutely key men. And most of them played brilliantly in Dublin last weekend. Yeah, there is a fallow week, so it's not like they're going to have to desperately scrounge around and try and open a window in the rugby calendar. But at the same time, it's not ideal. It's a bit of a disaster for France because they're going so well. It was against Scotland that everything came a cropper last year when Mohamed Haous, who's one of those players who's tested positive, threw that punch at Jamie Ritchie and hit the red card, pretty much scuppered their Grand Slam ambitions. A second string French side, they certainly give Scotland a very good game, but suddenly everything would change from a Scottish point of view if that game was to be played this weekend and none of those guys were around.
So Mike Catt there talked about the players not taking their opportunities. I interpreted that.
I don't remember many of those.
Well, I interpreted that as him talking about the overlaps out wide. And you are literally, you are amongst, I don't know how many, but one of the very, very few who was at the stadium in Dublin for the French game. So, for instance, you know that clip that went around on Twitter everywhere of they steal the line out around midfield early on in the game and then they kick it from the middle of the pitch and there seemed to be Irish numbers out wide. Did that jump out to you in the stadium as a mad thing to do? Like, did it look like the whole pitch had opened up on the near side and they had ignored it? Or did it strike you at the time? Can you remember?
It didn't strike me at the time that was a crazy decision to make. But I'll be honest, in commentary, nothing strikes you mid-flow as something that stands out to you. Because I've said this many times, you can switch off after a commentary and you would have very little idea as to what went on in the game. If somebody was to ask you for specific details or if someone was to ask you about a specific moment that took place in the game. But it's afterwards on second viewing that when I looked at the game again, and obviously I'd heard people talk about that moment, that was an opportunity to gain some ground and to put the French on the back foot. I don't know if he's referring to that particular moment.
No, I don't know.
But that is not a try-scoring opportunity. And the two or three or four that he mentioned that we gave up against the Welsh, I have no recollection of those. Now, often a head coach or an assistant coach might talk about maybe a stolen line-out in the opposition 22, which is something we have suffered from over the last 12 months or so. That's not necessarily a try-scoring opportunity. If you haven't even won the line-out, it doesn't go down in my book anyway. It's a chance to pressurise the opposition given up. But for example, the James Lowe try that wasn't, that's a genuine try scoring opportunity that wasn't taken. But over the two games, I can't recall many more than that.
Good news on Vera Powell, Richie.
Yeah, there is indeed. Vera Powell believes there's still plenty of potential within the Republic of Ireland squad. The Dutch native signed a new contract to guide the side through the 2023 World Cup qualifying campaign. Pardon me. Powell was originally appointed in 2019 and saw Ireland narrowly miss out on a playoff spot for the Euros. She was asked today about the subject of equal pay for the Irish women's side.
The problem is we do not yet bring in money, and equal pay comes when there's a possibility to equal pay. It is a starting point that we really want to achieve as quickly as possible. But the key thing is what we need is equal approach of opportunity. And that's a difference than being equal. The clubs train only two times a week. Players need to find their own places to, and there's a club three times a week, but then there's players who need to find their own training environment. There's all other issues that is not equal with the men. So let's focus first on getting equal opportunities for training, for development, and because that is something that is achievable and that is not expensive. That is something of will and enthusiasm, and it's then my task to make clear what would be the best steps to achieve that very quickly. And it is achievable.
Yeah, fair point. We tried to get Vera on the show this evening. She wasn't quite doing one-on-one interviews today, just press conference, but we'll speak to her at some stage, I'm sure, in the next couple of weeks. Always really interesting any time we have her on. So we're all obviously hearing about fairly severe restrictions until April into May at the moment is the latest. There's a lot of government people doing a lot of interviews, and it's fairly clustered. But in the UK, Richie, they're by May time having thousands inside stadiums again, it seems.
They're talking about June getting rid of masks and social distancing over there. Yeah, crowds of up to 10,000 could be allowed inside UK stadiums by May 17th. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson confirmed the step today as part of their roadmap out of lockdown. The FA Cup final falls on May 15th, but it could be used as a test event. But as things stand, the final round of Premier League matches, Wembley's Euro 2020 games, Golf's Open Championship and the Wimbledon Championships will all likely have fans present.
Well, I mean, I hope they're right. I hope they're right. I was listening to a report earlier today on the radio. So don't quote me verbatim, because I'm sure my recollection 8 hours on isn't super sharp. And I am not a COVID expert. But the point was being made that the UK are obviously, with these vaccines where you need to get a second vaccine 3-4 weeks later, they're just pressing ahead with giving as many people the first one as possible. And obviously, we're getting real world data for the first time, because this has never happened before. So what seems to be happening after that third, fourth week is that the efficacy is dropping from 85-86% right down to the low 60s. So that second booster vaccine is very important. Now, the UK are pressing on ahead with just let's get as many people the first one as possible. But the extent to which a fall off happens without the second one is a question mark. So look, all of these things, Dave, are floating around. I mean, listen, if they're right and it's all working out and we have thousands in stadiums happy out in May, then great. And hopefully we're not far behind them.
Well, I thought we were all now qualified epidemiologists and virologists over the last 3 or 4 months.
I am not. Trust me, I'm not. I'm not.
I think it's 97% of all doses in the UK are first dose only. Mm. And we are way ahead of that in terms of the number of vaccines that we've given that are first dose and then second dose. I think it's down towards 66% from an Irish point of view. So, yeah. But look, that's the road they've chosen to go down, and nobody really knows as yet. They're way ahead of us in terms of the numbers that they've been able to deliver in the last couple of months. So we'll certainly be getting a lot of evidence from the UK as to how things are going before we're in the same position as they are.
Shane Duffy then, Rich.
Yeah, the latest Republic of Ireland international to share sectarian abuse to which they've been subjected. The on-loan Celtic defender said surely there's a limit as he revealed the messages sent to him on Instagram, among them several alluding to his religion, others saying he was disabled, and one mocking the death of his father. Last week, James McLean also revealed the extent to which he's been abused on social media. Celtic tonight have come out in support of Shane Duffy, condemning that abuse sent to him via Instagram. Mm.
What are you making of all this, Dave? I mean, now if you're just an intention-seeking moron, and there's lots of them out there, you know, there's such a focus on this at the moment that you'll cause a bit of a stir and you'll be able to say to your mates, look, that was me who sent that to Duffy, and it's in all the papers now, am I great? And yet it feels important to highlight it as well. So we're into that tricky terrain now of how to deal with this, even as media, like to what extent do you... You know, because if it was a normal person, you'd say you'd be shaming them. But like, they might think, this is great. Look at me. I'm famous.
Yeah, you can only imagine the sort of individual that's involved and the kick that they would get out of the fact that they've created this kind of a stir. And this is in no way condoning what's being said to and about these people, because it's scandalous stuff. And I mean, some of the stuff that James McLean has had to deal with, it's up there with any sort of online abuse, be it racial abuse, personal abuse, abuse on grounds of sexual orientation or religion. It's despicable stuff, and it's been delivered by the lowest common denominator. But why are these guys on social media? Some of the really high profile guys, you know, I understand there are boot deals and sponsorship deals, and there's a corporate image that you're trying to cultivate, and maybe you've one eye on retirement as well, and the way you'll be able to develop your brand for the years after you've left the game. But the likes of James McLean, Shane Duffy, for example, the backgrounds they come from and the difficult things they've had to deal with over the years, I just don't see a future or a really positive reason for them to be on social media when the pain and negativity it brings into their lives. Now, they shouldn't be forced off social media by idiots such as this, but shouldn't they be considering why they are on it in the first place?
It's really difficult, that one, because where does that line end? You know, racist abuse, for instance, it's just not a satisfactory solution whereby if you're a black player, you just don't have a social media account because of the abuse you're going to receive. You know what I mean? It just, if you start down that line, then it just gets ridiculous. I mean, it's the idiots who are doing it who have to be chased out of there. The problem is there's so many idiots.
That is the ideal solution.
Yeah.
And that the large social media companies and the tech giants, they do need to start developing a way in which you have to present some sort of an ID, that you're traceable, that there is accountability when you set up a social media account, be it Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, whatever it might be. At the moment, the rigors in place don't go far enough.
No.
And that's why there is this wriggle room for these people to be able to fire abuse directly at these players. And I would wonder at this stage, for a Shane Duffy or a James McLean or a black player that's receiving some sort of racist abuse, are the positives outweighing what appear to be dreadful negatives for you remaining on social media? No one should be chased off social media. It should be there for many of the good things that it does provide, undoubtedly. But I wonder, if I was in a similar position myself, I would be asking myself, what am I doing here? Why am I giving these sort of cretins the opportunity to go straight after me in this way? And it's clearly having a negative effect on the family life of James McLean, for example. I mean, anyone who hasn't listened to his piece with Jaron Owen and Off the Ball, OTBAM last week, go back and have a listen to it. It's incredibly difficult to listen to, but I think people do need to listen to it.
Yeah, it's just a dreadful situation. I'm not sure what the solution is. I suspect we'll be talking about this, you know, for the next while, unfortunately. There is live football this evening.
Yep, Brighton and Crystal Palace both looking to put daylight between themselves and the Premier League's bottom three. Tonight they meet at the Amex, where kickoff is at 8. Aaron Connolly on the bench for Brighton tonight. Jason McCarthy on the comeback trail for Crystal Palace. He too is among their subs. As we mentioned, Jordan Brown joined an elite list of Northern Irish snooker players last night. He became just the fourth player from the six counties to win a ranking event with his victory at the Welsh Open. He beat Ronnie O'Sullivan 9-8 in the final at Celtic Manor. The Antrim man went into the week 81st in the world and has now cracked the top 50. And Brown joins Alex Higgins, Dennis Taylor and Mark Allen as part of the North's Mount Rushmore of the Bays.
That, it's insane. You know, if somebody was to say that to me, you know, I wouldn't have believed it. But it's an absolute honour, and I'm a very proud Northern Irishman to follow in their footsteps. It's just a dream come true.
Yeah, amazing. We must try and speak to him on the show in the next couple of days. A bit of racing news.
Yep, champion hurdle contender San Juan has been withdrawn from next month's Cheltenham Festival. The six-year-old won last year's county hurdle at Prestbury Park, but placed fourth in the Irish champion hurdle at Leopardstown earlier this month. Trainer Willie Mullins said it was better not to risk San Juan at Cheltenham.
Chatting to JP the other day, he was that we came to the conclusion that we're not happy with him and he won't run Cheltenham. You know, he just hasn't gone forward, and he's had one or two little niggles, and I think JP was happy to maybe just let him get over those.
Lads, he took the words right out of my mouth. What opportunities is Mike Cat exactly talking about? He must be looking at different matches to the rest of us. His flavour of the text coming in. Yeah, I assumed it was the overlaps, to be honest, because they were highlighted. I know Eddie O'Sullivan did an interesting piece on Against the Head where he showed quite a few overlaps. I mean, as to why they wouldn't be taking advantage of those, I don't know. Maybe it's an aggressive rushing defence makes it hard to throw that pass. I don't know. I mean, Andy Dunn, after 8 o'clock, is just most certainly of the opinion that offloads are the way forward. And we don't have to go from 1 in 54 carries, which is where we are now, to 1 in 9 like the French. Even just 2, 3, 4, 5 across in 80 minutes, he was saying, David, make a world of difference. And it, like, not least, I suspect, this isn't something Andy said, but I'm saying it, not least, I suspect, because it just places an extra little bit of doubt in the defence's mind, as well as the effect of the offload when you throw it.
You're keeping the defending team honest, aren't you? Mm. There's very little need for them to cover the space that they would if they feel that there's an offload about to happen. There is absolutely no need to commit more than one player to the tackle if you're almost certain that the offload will not happen. And if you visibly are not seeing trail runners on the shoulders of the ball carriers, and the French, they will be sitting back and they will be able to see that if it's Standard that's bringing the ball up, there is nobody on his shoulder in a position to accept the offload, so that's somebody that you do not have to worry about. Yeah. We're not keeping these defences honest enough.
Rich, last story.
Derry City have signed English midfielder Will Patching on loan for the season from Dundalk, while the Lilywhites themselves have snapped up American midfielder Tanner Dogan. You might remember him scoring from the halfway line for Athlone last season. And Republic of Ireland under 19 midfielder Adam Riley has joined Kevin Sheedy's Waterford on loan from Championship side Preston North End.
Okay, very good. Dave McIntyre, pleasure, great to have you with us.
Thank you, lads.
And Richie McCormick, I'll be talking to you tomorrow evening. Cheers.
Cheers. I'm going to get one of Dave's mics. They're class.
Hey, listen, only commentators get them.
Gizzle in, Dave.
Richie McCormick, Dave McIntyre. After 8 o'clock, Andy Dunn. Next up, we're talking to Carl Dennehy about athletics.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.